Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the private business stories when we come back. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." That clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin, but public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper are things like stocks and bonds and Federal Reserve notes and credit cards, debt, and usury. Well, in 1965, our Congress said that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin compared with clad coin or currency. And you know that's very true when we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper, and there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes due on that paper over gold. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew, and they knew as a matter of law, that gold and silver coin is absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well in 1933 when they did it, that in order to subjugate a free people, they must first take away the people's gold and silver coin in order to take away the people's right to property and to destroy those property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights. And that's because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me show you how to do just that. That's in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult home school. Now, if you'd like more information about our private business school, call and order our free general law CD package first. It's free. That's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. And then you can see whether or not this is for you or not. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. Private business stories. You know, one of the most talked about issues or talked about American ideas and ideals is called the American Dream. And the American Dream is to own a home in the suburbs and to raise your kids out here in the countryside someplace, to go to college, get a degree, so that we can make a lot of money and live happily ever after. People from all over the world desire to come to America and to live this American dream. Home ownership is right at the top of this portion of the dream. It's not just a nice car. It isn't just a good job. It isn't just living in the suburbs and vacations and movies and all the rest. It's that thing of home ownership. And certainly there are people that live that lifestyle And there are many more that desire to live that lifestyle. Well, the Department of Labor keeps track of things like that. They keep track of the income levels of various groups in our social strata. And so here's one in Hartford, Connecticut. It's a neighborhood. They go by zip code, and they took a look at this zip code, and they found that in this zip code, the people averaged $100,000 a year net income or more. Averaged $100,000 a year or more. And the Labor Department reports the following, that the average family with an income of $100,000 a year is in the top 5% of income earners. So in a nation of 300 million people, let's see if I got that 300 million times 0.05, 15 million people in America earn $100,000 a year or more. And the other 285 million of us earn something less than that. Okay. Now, this average family in this zip code is made up of college-educated professionals, such as doctors, dentists, lawyers, insurance brokers, and real estate brokers. So these are professionals. They have followed the American dream, and the formula for achieving it is a college education. On average, these people live in a $237,000 house. They drive one $40,000 car, although they own and maintain an average of three cars. Their expenses, on average, are as follows. Their income taxes, state, federal, and city, are 20% federal, 3% state, and 1% city, where it's applicable. And in this case, it's applicable. That takes 24% of their $100,000 income just paying their taxes. Now, their property taxes on this $237,000 house run about $3,000 a year. That's 3%. Now, the house payments are $1,711 a month with interest, and that takes about 20% of their income. Their utilities, telephone, gas, water, and electric, runs about 3%, and that's about $3,000 a year. Their insurance, that is life, health, fire, auto, and home, all of the insurance policies, cost about $6,000 a year, about 6%. Their entertainment is 5%. Groceries in an upscale household, including eating out, is 7%. And interest payments, you know, the interest payments on their credit cards, automobiles, and other finance charges, excluding the interest on the mortgage. That, remember, was number three. So all of the rest of their interest payments take 15%, or about $15,000 a year. Now, when you add all of that up, that totals 83%, or $83,000 a year. So when they get through with their fixed expenses, they have $17,000 a year of mad money. They can just do anything they want. They can go on the Love Boat. They can go down to Disneyland in Orlando, Florida. Just go out and spend money like it's going out of style. And again, this is called the American Dream. Maybe you're one of those that are living this American dream. And this is all done in public business. Now remember, I said, I'm going to tell you some private business stories. Everything here is public. These people that have business licenses are public professional people. They have professional licenses, bank accounts, and social security numbers. And they're out here in the public area of our economy. Now, there's another side to this. It's the private economy. And so I'm going to describe a private economy for you. It's a little bizarre. Get your pen and paper out here. You've probably never heard of this before. But in the book of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, there is a mandate for a lifestyle that is somewhat different but parallel to this American dream. In its operation, it's different, but the objective is the same. It's called your standard of living. How well can you live and how much money do you need in order to live that lifestyle? Now, if you're unemployed and your house is being foreclosed on and your car is gone, then you've taken a hit in your lifestyle. And so we want to live the lifestyle where we've got our car, got our house, and we're employed and we're making our payments and everything is going along fine. Now, here's a family, upscale, $100,000 a year, 83% of it goes to their fixed expenses, $17,000 is left over. Now, there's a biblical mandate for your lifestyle, and here's what it is. Get your pen and paper out. Number one, it's called tithes and holy day offerings, and it takes 15% of your income. We won't add up $100,000 yet. Just put 15% down for the equivalent, because those of us in private business don't pay income tax. Those of us in private business pay tithes and holy day offerings. It doesn't amount to 24% of our income, it amounts to 15%. Now, property taxes on 240 acres is $600 a year. And so put down 1.5%. Now, house payments. If you were to live this biblical lifestyle, your house payments would be zero because everything is paid for in cash. Now, I know right away you're going to say, wait. Where did you get all this cash to buy this house so that you don't have any house payments? Well, you just stand by now. Pay attention. Stand by. We're going to show you how to do that. But it's 1.5%. And that's the property taxes on 246 acres. Now, your house payments, remember, are free and clear, so that's zero. Now, the car payments are free and clear. So we have three units, and it's zero. We don't have any car payments. It's against the law to pay interest and usury. Debt is not against the law. Credit and debt is not against the law in the scripture, but it's discouraged. It's bad business. So one of my business principles is very straightforward. Credit business is bad business, both for the lender and the borrower. Not against the law, but it's bad business. Kind of like polygamy. Polygamy isn't against the law, but polygamy is bad business. Number five, groceries for a subsistence farmer is near zero. Now, it is true that I do spend a little money on groceries. I go over to the grocery store every once in a while, and I buy items that we don't produce here on the farm. You know, like ketchup, mustard, Vlasic sweet, what do they call those, bread and butter pickles. Now, it isn't that we couldn't make these items. We could if we put our minds to it, but there's only so many hours in a day. And we, frankly, are just too lazy to make ketchup, mustard, and pickles. So we do buy some, but it's pretty minor in the overall scheme of things. Number six is utilities. This is a big one out here in the country. Our utility bill runs about $800 a month. That's $9,600 a year and takes 24% of our income. Takes 24% of our earnings here. It's about equivalent, you know, if you live in the cities, 24% goes to taxes. Here, 24% goes to utilities. Now, number seven, our interest payments are zero. Remember, we don't pay interest or usury, so that's wiped out. And insurance, we don't have any insurance at all. No life insurance, homeowners insurance, auto insurance. Fire insurance, you know, we just don't have any, period, zero. I know you're shocked, but we don't practice limited liability. We practice strict liability, and it saves us quite a bit because, remember, this insurance bill down here was 6%. It's $6,000 a year. Now, if you're buying health insurance along with all of this, now that's kind of problematical. That can run anywhere from $12,000 to $27,000 a year. So I left that health insurance out. I don't know what you people are paying in the city for all of your insurance. But you can't have health insurance in the city for 6%. At least I don't think so. So if you've got health insurance, you might have to add a little bit more to that. Maybe you don't have $17,000 left over. The last item over here is entertainment. Now, on Sabbaths and holy days, you know, normal people practice Christmas, Easter, New Year's, and that's their Sabbaths and holy days. Now, we do the same thing. We practice Passover, Feast of Tabernacles, you know, the Day of Atonement and things like that. And we spend money on those days, and it's 10%. 10%. A little bit more than the entertainment that you get at 5% for my city cousin over here. But, you know, we have a good time, and it takes a little money to have a good time. Now, when we add this up, in the country, our fixed expenses, things like the telephone, electric, water, gas, property taxes, are in fact higher than our city cousins at $9,600 a year versus $6,000. But our pay cash, no interest lifestyle allows us to live in our home, drive three vehicles, although none of our cars are $40,000 models. I will concede I don't have a single $40,000 car, but I do have three cars. We eat better than our city cousins. We have all organic food. Now, organic food costs you a little bit more. If you're living in the city and you were to be buying that organic food, you wouldn't be able to live on that 7%, but that's the way we eat. So we eat a little better. And to end up with that $17,000 in disposable income, I've got to make $40,500 a year to equate to that $100,000 lifestyle in the city. So I need to make about 60% less to end up with that $17,000 cash, mad money, that I can use out here to go to Carnival Cruise or Disney World or something like that. Now, that's the way that deal comes down. Now, the biggest expense that you see here is your house. You know, you're going to spend $237,000 on your house. Some people spend more than that. And depending upon where you live, you know, it can be substantially higher. You could be $100,000 a man, perhaps in, you know, Las Vegas, Honolulu, New York, and you might not get near as much house as you would, say, in Phoenix, Arizona, or maybe Bismarck, North Dakota. Kind of depends on where you live. It just happens that I picked one from the Department of Labor's statistics from Hartford, Connecticut, and I can't tell you if that's high or low compared to Honolulu, which is really high, New York, which is really high, and Ozark County, Missouri, which is really low. Now, I have to tell you that it is true that in my county, this is the poorest county in the state. And so what we're doing here is we're comparing the poorest county in Missouri with maybe the richest county in Connecticut. So I can't tell you that. It could well be that I'm lower than I ought to be. But hey, listen, even if I needed $100,000 a year to equal the guy in the city, you know, here in Ozark County, it would leave me with more mad money because I don't have five important items. Listen to this. I'm not paying any house payments, car payments, groceries, interest payments, or insurance. I've got to come out a little bit better, don't you think? All right, now with that in mind, let's take a look at this house, this $237,000 house. Let's use a little different number over here. Let's suppose that we've got homebuyer A and homebuyer B. Get your pen and paper out here. I'm going to give you a couple of numbers. We're going to take a little test here. Put down homebuyer A buys a house for $100,000. He keeps the house for 30 years. So put that down. $100,000, 30 years. He sells the house at the end of the 30 years for $10,000 and suffers a $90,000 loss. And that's because houses do not appreciate. I don't know if you knew this or not, but if you build a house and you lived in that house for 30 years, do you know that the roof on that house will not last for 30 years? In case you didn't know, roofs only last 20 years and then they have to be replaced. All right. Now, did you know that the carpet in that house will not last for 30 years? The appliances in there won't last for 30 years. The paint won't last for 30 years. So you're going to have to paint the house, put in new appliances, recarpet it, put a new roof on. There's all these thingies that you have to do to this house during this period of time. The house literally disintegrates. It gets used up like an automobile. You know, when you buy a new car, have you ever heard of anybody buying a car and keeping it for 30 years? Boys and girls, cars don't last for 30 years. Now, automobiles depreciate, don't they? If you take a 2010 automobile that you just bought brand new for $20,000 and you keep that thing for 10 years, 10 years from now, that $20,000 automobile is going to be worth about $1,000 or $1,500. And that's reality. So houses actually depreciate. So we're going to take homeowner A, depreciates his house out, sells it for $10,000, and takes a $90,000 loss. Now, that's a bummer. Let's take homeowner B. Now, he's a wiser fellow, and he buys a house, but he doesn't pay cash. He leverages his money. He saves his $90,000 and pays $10,000 down. And then he uses his $90,000 to buy, sell, and trade with and do all kinds of other good things. Now, for 30 years, he makes his house payments. And he pays 6% interest, which is pretty reasonable. That's not like paying interest, at the rate of 8, 9, 10%. Just 6%, 30 years. And in the program, he sells the house at the end of 30 years for $250,000. You got that down? Homeowner B pays 10% down, makes his payments for 30 years, sells his house at the end of 30 years for $250,000. Now, he's going to have to pay a little capital gain tax on that. But when he's all through with it, he's got a couple of nickels to rub together, didn't he? Let me ask you this question. Between these two guys, homeowner A, who bought it for $100,000, sold for $10,000, lost $90,000 right off the top, the other guy who pays for his house over 30 years, pays 6% interest, sells his house for $250,000, pays his capital gain tax, which one of them lost the most money? Or, put another way, which one of them made the most and which one of them lost the most? Which one of them came out the best on the business transaction? It's a 30-year-long business transaction. And you don't know what the answer to the riddle is until you get to the end of the 30 years. You add in all of your expenses, total them all up. Cost of goods sold is what we call that in the business world. And then, you sell your house for $250,000, subtract the cost of goods sold, and how much is your profit? It's a no-brainer, isn't it? You don't have to go to college to figure out that the guy that bought the house over time is the guy that came out the best. I mean, come on, the one guy lost $90,000 coming out of the chute. We don't know exactly what the numbers work out to be on the other guy because there's some complex mathematical formula that we've got to follow to come to a conclusion. But you know, right off the top of your head, you know that homeowner B is the wisest of these two homeowners. Now, you got that straight? Let me show you what the answer to it is, because I already took the time, effort, and energy to do the arithmetic for you. So get your pen and paper out here. I'm going to show you how this comes down. Show you how it comes down. The purchase price on this house, now, let's take a house for $50,000 instead of $100,000, shall we? The $50,000 purchase price in 1955 is the year. The interest rate is 6% and the monthly payments are $300 a month. So for a $100,000 house, we would be paying 6% interest, $600 a month, $10,000 down. You know, the numbers simply double. It's just that the formula that I've got in front of me, I did it with a $50,000 house. So 1955, we're going to buy it. 1985, we're going to sell it. I'm going to give you the exact numbers here. And when we get to the end of the deal, the end of the sale here, I'm going to show you how much profit you get. Now, everybody knows that the way for little guys like us to make money, you know, us bottom feeders, is to buy a home and live in the home and go to work every day and take your lunch bucket with you, you know, bring your paycheck home every Friday. And at the end of 30 years, you're going to have a nest egg. You're going to have something to show for your work, for your time, effort, and energy. Now, real estate is, without a doubt, the single best investment that you can make. You know that. You've been told that all your life. All right, so the total interest on this deal here is $62,100. That's right, 6% interest for 360 payments on a $45,000 note is $62,100. The amount financed was $45,000. The principal payments every month were $125 a month, and the average monthly payments were $297. I rounded them off to $300, but the actual number is $297. Now, your taxes per month are $50. $600 a year. Your upkeep per month, that is that new roof, new appliances, new carpet, and new paint, you know, that you had to put on your house over 30 years, is $50 a month. That's $600. The insurance every month is $50 a month. That's $600 a year. The brokerage fee, that is the amount of money that you had to pay to the broker when you bought the house, and the amount of money that you had to pay the broker when you sold the house. And that's $15,000. Now, there's a little thing here called points, mortgage insurance, title search, title insurance, and closing costs. Have you ever heard those words before? Points, mortgage, insurance, title insurance, and closing costs. They cost you $5,000. So for 30 years, the total cost was $186,100. Not bad. Now remember, we sold this thing for $250,000. The total cost on this thing is $186,100. Now, remember the sale price in 1985 was $250,000. So if we subtract $186,100 from that, we have a gross profit for 30 years of $63,900. Now, it isn't as good as it might have sounded, because, you know, when you buy it for $50 and you sell it for $250, sounds like you made $200,000 profit. But again, you got this nasty called cost of goods sold. And remember, when you make a business transaction, you have to add in all the costs. And so, by adding in all the costs, it cost us $186,100, but it gets a little better than that. So your gross profit for 30 years is $63,900. Total income per year, $2,130 on your investment. $2,000 a year. Now, the capital gain tax on this transaction at 28% was $17,892, which left you with an adjusted net profit of $46,008. I mean, when you walked out of here, partner, you had $46,008. Now remember, you paid 50 and 5 down, financed 45, and now when you walk out of there, you got $46,008. Just about $4,000 less than you paid for the property over 30 years. Now, you're going to sit there and say, well, that's not as good a profit as I would have hoped for, but you know it's better than a kick in the pants. It's better than 360 rent receipts, isn't it? You know, this is what I hear all the time. The guy says, yeah, but if you don't buy a house, where are you going to live? You're going to live in an apartment, or you're going to rent a house, and it's going to cost you 360 rent receipts and about the same amount of money. This way, I end up with the house, and now I don't have to pay rent for the rest of my life, or I can sell the house, and over the period of time, I got a little pocket change in my pocket, which is a lot better than 360 rent receipts, which went right down the toilet, and I got paid nothing. All right, boys and girls, with the numbers in your mind, hang on for a second, and let me give you a reminder here at the halfway point, and we'll take a look at how much the loss is on this transaction. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, managers, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So don't blame them. Blame me. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the American dream, owning a home, making $100,000 a year, getting a college degree, living the good life, living happily ever after, and making money in the process. So we started off with this exercise with homeowner A and homeowner B. Homeowner A bought a house for $100,000. 30 years later, he sold it, and he sold it for $10,000 and lost $90,000 on the transaction. Over a 30-year period, he lost $90,000. Homeowner B, the wise man of our story, bought a house for $10,000 down, made his home payments at 6% interest, and then sold his house, and then he sold it for $250,000. $250,000. Bought it for $50,000, sold it for $250,000. Paid his taxes and did all the things. Now, this is the transaction that we're all encouraged to make. This is what the real estate broker tells you is the wise decision. This is what mom and dad advised you to do. It's what Aunt Bessie encouraged you to do. Do you remember? Go to college, get a good education, come out, put a down payment on a home, pay your payments for 30 years. It's the way to live the American dream. All right. Now, the net loss for number two is $92,664. So you write that down, $92,664. And the net loss for A was $90,000. So the guy that bought the house on time, paid his interest and payments, lost $2,664 more than homeowner A, who bought a house for $100,000, sold it for $10,000, lost $90,000, coming right out of the chute. Homeowner B filed his tax returns every year, did all the things that were good, put on underarm deodorant, followed his advice from Aunt Bessie and the real estate brokers, followed your college professors and your high school teachers. They all told you, buy a house, and this is the way to do it. All right, now, get your pen and paper out here. Don't go away. I'm going to show you what happened to you. We have what's known in the business world as the break-even point. The break-even point. On every business transaction, there's a break-even point, and then there's loss that follows that. If the break-even point occurs in the 39th year on a 30-year mortgage, well, you're in Fat City. If the break-even point occurs up front, say in 5 or 10 years, then you've got a loser. And this is a loser. Going back to 1955, when you made that $5,000 down payment, you had to have the cash. So let's suppose that you were working at the Mutual Plywood Company, and you were making $1,000 a month. And you saved your money, and you saved up $5,000, and you paid $5,000 down. Well, in 1955, you could have bought two 1955 Chevrolet automobiles. Now, in 1955, this $5,000 now represents two Chevrolet cars. Now, in 1956, you could have bought one 1956 Buick for $3,564. $3,564 would have bought you cash now. Cash money. Just walk into the dealer, pony up $100 bills. He would have sold you that car in 1956. Raymond Souza did it. He and his two brothers bought a 1956 Buick. They paid $3,600 for it, cash. In 1957, you could have bought a brand new 1957 Oldsmobile for the same $3,564. Now remember, you're paying $300 a month times 12 months is $3,600 a year for 30 years. So when you walked into the deal, you agreed to pay $3,600 times 30 years or $108,000 for this $50,000 house. When you signed the contract, you said, I'm going to buy a $50,000 house, and I'm going to pay you $108,000 for it. I'm going to buy one for me and one for you, Mr. Banker, and a little bit to boot. Now, that being the case, then, the break-even point was 1958. Break-even point. And here's why. Because the $46,000 that you received today, in today's dollars, doesn't buy as much as the original $50,000 bought in 1955. We have an invisible tax here called the inflation tax. Nobody adds that in. And people that go to college don't know how to compute it. They don't learn that in high school and college. Nobody teaches that. They go to public school, they learn public business. They don't learn how to count. They get very angry at the Jews because the Jews run all the banks and Wall Street and Hollywood. They control our Congress. They control our public institutions and governorships and so on. And they control our banks and insurance companies. Oh, people get angry with the Jews. As if it's all their fault because they can count and we can't. So I thought, well, you know, the Jews, you know, good people that they are, shouldn't have a monopoly on knowing how to count. I think Christians can learn how to count. Muslims can learn how to count. And I'm going to show you how to do that. The transaction here's break-even point is in 1958, and that's because if you add up the cost of a 1985 Chevrolet, it was $11,500. You can do this exercise over any 30-year period you want to. You can go back to 1865. You can start in 1925. You can do this from 1980 to 2010. I don't care. You just take the prices in 1980 and then add in the hidden tax and put in your 5% or 6% interest that you're paying. And when you get to the end of the exercise, your numbers will be a little different. Doesn't make any difference whether you buy a $50,000 house or a $100,000 house or a $1 million house. I don't care. I hear of people who are poor people and they buy $100,000 houses. And then middle class people, they buy $200,000-$300,000 houses. And then rich people, they buy $1 million, $2 million, or $5 million houses. And they only have one thing in common. They put down a down payment and make their payments. And you people out there that are making your down payments and making your payments are losing money on your transaction every single time without fail. And the guy that's making you the loan is making money on the transaction every single time without fail. And here's the tragedy of it. The guy that paid $100,000 for the house, sold it for $10,000, and lost $90,000, he can see right up front the ripoff. He can see, my God, I lost $90,000, 90% of my investment, gone, no profit, dead loss. Can you say loss, boys and girls? Here's the tragedy. The guy that bought the house for $50,000 and sold it for $250,000, he believes that he made a $200,000 profit. That's what makes this fiction called the American Dream so profitable for Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan. These guys can't lose. You talk about a honeypot. You talk about a gold mine. They've got a nation of people that can't count, believe in the American dream, that if they buy a house and pay interest and usury on it, which they were told by God Almighty Himself, don't do that. Don't do that. That's a mistake. Don't do that. And they're going to lose money. Now watch this. Get your pen and paper out and let me show you the numbers again here. You ended up with $46,000. In 1985, your $46,000 will buy four 1985 Chevrolets. The break-even point was when you could have bought two 1955 Chevrolets, one 1956 Buick, and one 1957 Oldsmobile. That equals your $46,000 profit. So the first 4 years, 55, 56, 57, those 3 years, that's where you hit the break-even point. That's where you hit the wall on this business transaction. Every year from 1958 to 1985 that you paid your $3,600 a year, it was a dead loss, which totals $92,664. And boys and girls, that's a conservative loss. There isn't anybody that I know of that can keep a house up for $50 a month. Not even from 55 to 85. I don't believe it. Same thing with the insurance, and the same thing here with your fixed costs. But, you know, I said, well, we'll just plug in a low-end number over here and lowball it. And your loss is the same as or a little bit more. There's no profit to be made, boys and girls, in the American dream. It is just that, a dream. Doesn't have anything to do with reality. Now, we could buy a house. We could do better than that. We could build a house. There are a number of things that we could do to solve our housing problem that would pay off a whole lot better than buying a house for 10% down, 6% interest for 30 years. So let me tell you about one of them, just one. I've got four or five more stories here I'm going to add in here, because housing is your number one expense. It's the biggest thing that you're probably ever going to buy. So, and once when I was in ninth grade, there was a young fellow in there by the name of Henry Moore. If you're listening, Henry, I got a story to tell, and you're a great example. Henry Moore. In the ninth grade, Henry Moore was about 6 foot two or three. Big, tall, skinny kid. I say big, tall, you know, he was. And I think he should have been he should have been a junior that year. He was 2 years behind. It was in Mrs. Denbo's English class, where I think I scored about an average D. I think I got D's. And I think Henry scored average C, if I remember right. Henry got C's. Now, there were some real smart kids in there. I'm sure they went on to college and became doctors and lawyers and Indian chiefs. But Henry was smarter than I was. He did better in there than I did. And he was 2 years behind. So, you know, comes graduation, and old Henry does his thing in life, and I do mine. Now, I didn't meet Henry again after that year, 1953 or 4 or 5, long in there, and until our 45th class reunion. And so I walked into the reunion, and I'm sitting there sipping a margarita at the bar, and I see this guy, and I said, "Hey, you look familiar. Is your name Henry Moore?" And he said, "Yeah, it is." And he said, "You know, I think I know you. I recognize you." And I said, "Well, my name is George Gordon." And he said, "Oh, yeah, I remember you from Mrs. Denbo's English class." And we sat down, we drinking and just having a good time, and we're chit-chatting and one thing and another. And I said, "Well, tell me, what did you do after you graduated from high school?" He said, "Well, I took an apprenticeship in the electrical union, and I've been an electrician all my life. And I'm going to retire from the electrical union, and I'm going to get a pension, and then I've got my Social Security, and I've got some rental houses." Now, I said, "Rental houses, that sounds interesting, because, see, I'm an old-timey general contractor." And so, you know, and a guy, "Well, how'd you get the rental house?" I said, "Well, I build them." "You build them?" I said, "My goodness, that's interesting. You build them by yourself, or you contracted them out? What'd you do?" He said, "Well, here's what I did. The first one I built is the one I'm living in right now. Been in it now, you know, about my whole life. And I bought a lot out on K Street, and I went to work on it. And I just, as I got enough money, I bought building materials, and I just went out there and built it with my wife. And the two of us built the house and moved in, lived there, and here we're still there. And then I did the same thing every 3-4 years. You know, I'd save up some money, go out and buy a lot, and then I'd build another house on it. It takes about 3-4 years to build a house. And I'd get through building the house, and then I'd rent it out, and then I'd go build another one. Now I've got 7 houses, I live in one, and rent out the other 3. Now, the rentals, this is about 2002, boys and girls, 2002, 45th class reunion, as I recall. And And at that time, those houses were renting for $1,200 a month, and then he had seven of them. That's $8,400 a month, plus his retirement from the union, plus his Social Security. Now, I want to tell you, I don't have any union retirement, and I don't have any Social Security, and I'm still working, and I'm 70 years old, and I don't have seven houses. How do you like that? But then, I was dumber than he was. I didn't get C's in English. I only got D's. I want to ask you this. How many of you doctors, dentists, professionals, real estate brokers, all you people with college degrees, you old guys out there retired now on your Social Security, how many of you got $8,400 a month coming in off of your rentals plus, huh? And some of you probably do. But that ain't bad for a blue-collar worker, is it? Now, there was 305 students in that class, 305. I wasn't one of them. I didn't graduate with that class. I dropped out in the 12th grade. I'm a high school dropout. That shows you how dumb I am. Out of the 305, though, that did graduate in that class, 16 of them were dead as of 2002. Everybody in 2002 was talking about their impending retirements, everybody but me. I was the only one that wasn't going to retire because I resigned from Social Security back in 84. Didn't have any retirement to come in from any pensions or anything. So I just got to work until I die. Talk about being cursed now, huh? I'm as bad off as Moses was. He lived to be 120. Worked until he was 120, died without retiring. Can you believe it? But out of the 305, I'll bet you that there isn't 20 or 30 students out of that. I'll bet you that there isn't 10% of that class that's making $8,400 a month in his retirement or his golden years, they call that. In this country, we call that your golden years when you're retired. Now, that's Henry Moore. Not bad, I'd say. Now, there was one more guy I got to tell you a little story about. His name was Bob Hallstrom. Bob Hallstrom bought 5 acres up at Prairie, Idaho. And he built a house, 1,700-square-foot house. He built a roof over his Nomad trailer. He built a shop, and then the shop was probably, I'm going to guess, 20 by 20. Could have been a little bigger than that. That's 400 square feet. Pretty good sized shop. He put in a septic system and a ram pump in a creek that ran through the property for water. And he built a little barn. He had a little barn on there. Now, he was retired from the Army, and he had $1,500 a month in 1982 when I first met Bob. Between 1982... 83 and 84. In those 3 years, he took $500 a month out of his retirement. Now, he was married, and his wife worked, and I don't know what Sue was earning. Now, I haven't got a number on that, but I knew Bob had $1,500 in retirement. He was an Army major. And then Bob and Sue went out there and built a house over 36 months, and it cost them $500 a month for 36 months. So I take 36 times 500, and then it's $18,000. Let's round it off to 20, shall we? And they spent $20,000 building this operation out here, just buying the building materials, loading it in a pickup, and hauling it out there. And then old Bob, he's pretty crafty, and then he'd say, "Hey, George, you want to come up to Prairie over the weekend? We're up there working and building, and the beer's on me." And so I'd go up there, you know, with Niels and a couple other guys, and we're up there, you know, helping Bob build his house, and he'd get free labor from us, and, you know, Sue would cook us and make us some sandwiches, you know, one thing and another. We just had a great time, kind of like the Amish do, you know, when they help each other build barns and build houses. We had a great time. I really enjoyed myself up there. I enjoyed helping Bob build his house. And the labor I gave him was kind of fun. And so, you know, when it was all said and done, he's got a $20,000 investment in 5 acres, and he's got a house, a barn, a shop, and lean-to over his Nomad trailer, and a ram pump, and a septic system, and, you know, there it is. Now, let's suppose that we took that same house, and we sold it. Well, that house would have been worth $60,000 on the market all day long. You know, it's 1,700 feet. Now, 1,700 times 100 is $170,000 today. That's what you'd be paying today, $100 a square foot per 1,700 feet. Back in those days, it was worth about $35 a square foot. So at 1,700 times 35, $59,500. So I rounded it off to 60. If you would have got a mortgage back in those days, it would have cost you 8.5%. And 8.5% just happens to work out to one house for you and two houses for the banker. That's $180,000 over 30 years. So here's a $20,000 house. That's what it actually cost Bob to build over a period of 3 years, saving $500 a month out of his pay, spending it on the building materials, and then using his own sweat equity and that of his friends. And when he was all through, he had a $60,000 house. Instead of buying a $50,000 house for $5,000 down, $300 a month for 30 years, he took $500 a month for 36 months. If he would have taken $300 a month for 72 months, he could have done the same thing, couldn't he? In fact, boys and girls, you could take your savings and you could have a contractor build that thing for you in 72 months. I'll show you how that works as we progress along. I'm running out of time here, and I want to close this out and leave you a little something to think about, a little food for thought. Now, I'm an old-timey general contractor, so let me tell you how we figure things. When I build a house, let's say I'm going to build a $50,000 house, it's going to cost me $25,000 to build it, $12,500 for labor, $12,500 for building materials. So whatever the price of the house, you can just look at that house, cut it down to 25%, and that's what the actual cost is to you if you put in your own labor. Now, I know you're going to sit there and say, but I don't know how to build a house. Well, my wife and her husband, Ed Davis, built this house in 3 years, and they built it for $7,000, and it's 4,000 square feet. They built it in 1968 through 1971, 3 years. And when they got through, she said, I had a choice. It's either I'm going to build a big house or I'm going to buy a little one. So I thought, I think instead of buying a little house, I think I'll build a great big one. And that's what she did. Now I'm going to show you in the upcoming programs how to do that and how you too can have a house for 25% of the market price. Do it over the next 60 months, no matter where you live in America or what you're doing today, I don't care what it is. You can do it yourself. Probably you can do it in less than 60 months, but I'll show you how to do it in 60 months, no matter where you are or what you're doing. How's that for a plan? Hey, I'm out of time here, kids. I'm going to have to leave you right here and remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log, schedule, and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.